This is the third in the series with Joe Waters, who runs the cause marketing program for Boston Medical Center. And he blogs at selfishgiving.com, and he runs six-figure cause marketing as well. So Joe, thank you for joining us again. Today, we are going to be covering social media and cause marketing, and also looking at the metrics for cause marketing campaigns. And it's the second topic that we're going to start us off getting into, to the metrics, tracking and setting up the metrics as you build a campaign. Good to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much, Olivia. It's nice to be back. These have been a great interview series for me as well, to be talking about these things instead of writing about them all the time.
I know, that must feel nice. So when you are setting up these cause marketing campaigns, and again, you're working with these companies from a nonprofit, the Boston Medical Center, mm-hmm. How do you implement the metrics? How do you know what metrics to use, and how do you implement them in a way that you can do it with some ease and facility?
Well, you know, in terms of, you know, the results for the cause marketing campaign, you know, we can kind of look at it two ways. You know, there's the for-profit metrics, is the kind of the metrics that we kind of collect on our side of the process, and then there's the for-profit that obviously has their metrics, you know, as a result of the campaign, and those vary widely just as much as ours do. I mean, what we really look at here at Boston Medical Center in terms of metrics is we obviously look at dollars raised. I mean, you know, that's a really important factor in terms of how we measure the success of the program. We look at something like, you know, I recently wrote on my blog about Ocean State Job Lots and how they raised $212,000 for us in December with a point of sale program, which was almost a 40% increase over last year. And we look at the metrics on something like that. But with other programs that we do, because many of our pinup programs, Olivia, are tied to events, and I think of specifically like our Halloween Town event in October, that we just don't look at dollars raised from those programs. We look at how well the pinup promoted the program. And the way we find out that information is we collect a lot of surveys at our events. And so we make a point of, you know, hiring lots of interns for our events. You know, at Halloween Town this past year, Olivia, we had 1,200 volunteers for the event. And we had a survey team that went out there and talked to the 14,000 people that were at the event and asked them how they heard about the event. And we found out that 1 in 5 people that attended Halloween Town this year found out about the event through the pinup program that we had in these stores. So on the one hand, we're measuring dollars raised through the pinup program as a successful metric. And then the other thing that we're measuring is the visibility and the promotion for the program. And in that case, it has become an important form of advertising and promotion for the event. The challenging part for us, I think, and I think for most small and mid-sized nonprofits that are doing cause marketing programs, is how do you measure the branding impact of these cause marketing programs? So when you're doing these programs and you're thinking about growing the impact of your brand in the marketplace and how people feel toward it, there just isn't enough resources in most nonprofits to conduct a lot of research and studies to show how much cause marketing is really impact and enhancing that brand. So at our level, at the local level, we're looking at visibility and we're looking at dollars raised. Those are the two most important things. Now, on the for-profit side, though, Olivia, what for-profit's looking at is they are looking at, is this driving sales for me? Is this enhancing favorability for me? Is this enhancing my brand? And, you know, depending on the company that you're working with, they all have different ways of doing this. The company that I worked with that was most sophisticated in doing this was Staples, the office supply company. They did a tremendous job in the 2 years they worked with us on pinup programs of collecting data on people that bought pinups and also redeemed the coupons on that pinups in their stores to find out what the redemption rate was, where they got the coupons from, and how much they brought into the store. And what was kind of interesting was is Staples was part of a larger cross-promotion that involved other retailers besides Staples and involved iParty and some other retailers here in Boston. Staples found that the $5 coupon that they offered in their pinup, Olivia, cost them about $40,000 to extend to their customers. That was what it cost them in redemptions. But they made almost $400,000 in additional sales from that coupon. And 1,200 of those coupons came from other stores besides Staples stores. So they looked at that, at the metrics of that program, and said, wow, not only are we getting coupons from other people besides our own stores, people are using the coupons and they're spending additional money buying things at Staples. So for them, it was a really big win-win-win.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever work on metrics together with your for-profit partners, or do they really, is it really separate, give the for-profit and non-profit and what each one is going for?
Well, I think where we really work with the for-profit in terms of our metrics especially is in the partner recruitment process, because you know a lot of those metrics that we, you know, that we're collecting before the, at the event or about the program, those are the types of metrics that we take to go out and solicit partners for next year. So those things become very important and powerful to us when we're going out and we're talking to partners about just how successful these programs can be. And but one thing that a lot of these for-profit partners haven't really looked at, and again, because it's a matter of putting resources and looking at it a much taking a much bigger picture look at it, is major, looking at the impact of these point of sale programs on their favorability and how customers kind of view it. So in a lot of ways, they're looking at the sales impact of these programs and how much they're helping them. And fortunately for us, Olivia, at this point, those things have been very good.
And have you seen them do a good job measuring the favorability impact, which is, of course, is a challenge to understand and to measure?
I think it's always a challenge for us, to collect that, especially when, we're doing a straight point of sale program, with a retailer, and so we don't have the event backdrop to gather a lot of information, and then it really becomes a matter of like how much did the program raise, because that's what really determines the success of it. And but fortunately, these programs, as we've talked of in the past interviews, are very successful, and they raise a lot of money. So on the surface, they show very well as something that do very well in the marketplace.
Let's look at the example for a moment of the Ocean State job loss, which you just mentioned. I don't want to get too deeply into it, but you mentioned that in December they raised over $200,000 for the Boston Medical Center through a program. While they were measuring the revenue that they brought in for you, were they looking at their impact on customer favorability?
Well, I think they, the big thing about Ocean State Job Lot is they are a very mission-centric company that is concerned about doing the right thing in the community. So I don't think they are looking at how this improves their favorability with their consumers. I think they're more concerned about supporting Boston Medical Center. And the fact that the program, helps their favorability, that's kind of like an added benefit for them. But they see it as something that they need to be doing. And they've seen it like every year the program has gone up in terms of dollars raised. So they've seen it as a positive response from their customers that they don't mind supporting these programs.
And are there other companies you've seen have done a good job in measuring that and trying to getting a pulse on the favorability impact of their cause marketing campaign?
Yeah, like I said, I think the only ones that that have done the most research on it have really been the most credible research, in terms of really interviewing customers and talking to them, or running the barcodes through and finding out information, has been Staples. But that was mainly on a sales perspective. And I think what it really shows too, Olivia, is that when it comes to doing cause related marketing programs for small nonprofits, in many ways we have to kind of avoid the idea of branding and focusing on that, because, you know, the idea of raising money and visibility is something that's much more achievable for small nonprofits, because we can talk about branding, but it's not something that we can really measure as small nonprofits and small businesses, because let's face it, that's something that most big businesses really focus on.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you talk about branding versus visibility, what distinction that you're making?
The distinction between that? Well, when I think of the visibility, what I'll talk about is media impressions. Like, you know, when I talk about the impact of, say, Halloween Town and, you know, the pinup programs that we do in the area in the month of October, I'll say that we have 5 million media impressions in Boston during October, thanks to Halloween Town. Now, that includes other things, too, besides pinups, obviously. But what I'm saying to people is that's the type of visibility that we have on that. But in terms of, you know, when we talk about branding, if we talk about brand as the emotional connection that people have with a product or service when they come into contact with it, you know, that's something that you got to really dig a little bit deeper into and do some research on. And, you know, that's something that we neither have the resources or the time to really kind of dig into. That's why in many instances we stick with the idea of focusing on how much visibility did this give the hospital. Because branding can be a very tricky word.
Do you have on your metrics? You've done a lot of these campaigns, so I can assume that you've got this down into a good pattern. But do you outline your metrics from the beginning? And did you do that? Is it hard if a for-profit or nonprofit doesn't outline their metrics from the outset?
Well, I think that, you know, in terms of doing these campaigns and, you know, whether or not they're kind of hard from the beginning. And did you say metrics, company metrics?
Right, metrics for benchmarks and metrics for a successful campaign.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we try to do is, you know, we try to be realistic with the company. I mean, you know, like you had said, Olivia, you know, fortunately, we've done so many of these campaigns at this point that we have a good indicator based on how many stores we're dealing with and how much foot traffic they had in those stores, how much money we're going to raise from those businesses. But in the beginning, when we were first putting these programs together, it was difficult to say, okay, this is how much we're going to raise, because, you know, you want to be optimistic and positive with a company on something like that. And but now, and, you know, that's what we try to even guide some of our other nonprofit clients on, is being realistic about how much, you know, these stores can raise. You know, I was even in a vitamin shop the other day, and, you know, vitamin shops are all over the United States. I think there's 350 locations. They do a point-of-sale program for something called Vitamin Angels, which is a wonderful program that is nicely connected with their brand. But vitamin shops just aren't that busy. They're not busy like a supermarket anyways, if they're going to get the type of foot traffic that some of these other retailers will get. So you have to be realistic about how much money that you can really raise doing a point-of-sale program on something like that. So it does take time to kind of get a sense about how much you could raise with each retailer.
Mm-hmm. And this sounds like a leading or an obvious question, but after you collect data from a campaign or from an event like Halloween Town, how much does it impact and direct your next campaign? Do you have the time to go over it, digest it, and say, here's where we were strong, here's where we fell short, and this is directly what we're going to do because of this data we collected?
Absolutely. You know, we definitely after every program we do, we definitely take a look at, you know, everything we've done. I mean, you know, and a lot of times it's interesting too, you know, what we're even looking at now, Olivia, with a lot of our pinup programs is, you know, one of the things I actually feel very guilty about is I actually feel guilty about printing all these paper icons, you know, and giving them to all these stores and stuff like that. So one of the things that, and then, you know, having like sometimes in instances, Olivia, like boxes of these things thrown away because stores don't use them. And so what we're really trying to do with every campaign is learn how to better use resources, like, for example, to use a thinner, smaller pinup than we used for a prior campaign. We've also managed our shipping better with retailers so that they get their supply in a more timely manner, that they only get how many they need, and that they're resupplied in a timely manner so that there's no waste, which saves us an expense and which also saves the environment, which we're really committed to. And, you know, we want to get to that point someday where we can just do the electronic mobile and have that done through the credit card machine at the register. But, you know, most stores really just aren't there yet. And the paper icon is actually a wonderful visible sign of the consumer support for the program. But, you know, so we learn every time we do these programs how to do them better, not only, you know, to save ourselves headaches, but also to make more money and to save money.
So I'm going to use that as the transition to get into social media. So, you know, leaving the paper pinups aside and going online, you are enthusiastic about a couple of options, Foursquare and Causeworld in particular, and see a lot of links and utility for cause marketing with both of them. So can you start us off in wherever you'd like?
You know, I just think what I've always been kind of interested in about these location-based services like Foursquare, like Causeworld, like Gowalla, I'm trying to think of it right now. Actually, Google has its own product out there, but there's all these location-based products out there, and you know the whole idea is that there's this whole check-in process that happens. And what retailers love and businesses love about this is a lot of this happens when you're actually in the business. So it isn't like you're home now looking through a flyer in the Sunday newspaper and you see an ad for a product. You're actually in the business now checking in, and you have the opportunity to see an ad for a service or product that you're interested in that may be in the place that you're in or right down the street. And that's kind of the opportunity that Foursquare offers. And, I mean, location-based services, they offer a lot more than that because there's an opportunity to explore the area that you're in using these services and also connect with friends because you can also see the others that are kind of in the location that you're in. But what I see from a cause marketing perspective, Olivia, is with things like Foursquare, if you can walk into a store and check in and say that you are in a supermarket at that point, and a screen pops up that says, don't forget to go down aisle number 4 because there's a product down there that benefits the American Red Cross, and you can get 5% off your order if you buy that today. You know what I mean? And that's the type of connection that these types of services can have with social media. Just as they can drive consumer purchases, they can drive giving. It could be the same thing with a point of sale program. You know, we would love to have something like this around Halloween Town because we have lots of coupons associated with our pinups. But when people go into a store, they could say, be sure when you're at the register to pick up your Halloween Town pinup. There's $175 in coupons there. So there's a lot of ways that we could kind of tie that in, and then we don't have to rely so much, Olivia, on the cashier, the person at the register to activate the program, because sometimes they're just unreliable, and they have lots of other things going on besides, making the ask on behalf of a charity. So maybe we can let people, we can let people's iPhones do that, which they always seem to have in their face anyways.
So those are two great examples, or a couple of great examples that you think about as a pinup and some of the products. What would it take for companies and nonprofits to start doing this? Let me take a step back before I answer that question. For Causeworld, the way that it works is you go and you check in at these places and you collect karma points, which then can be donated to a charity, and you get various badges for doing so. That's correct.
Right.
Okay, so what would it take for a Causeworld or a Foursquare to give us the opportunities that you just talked about?
Well, I think they're already kind of, you know, I think the opportunities are out there. And as a matter of fact, here at Boston Medical Center, we're already kind of working on a couple of these different opportunities. And I think what, and this is what I was actually talking about to a nonprofit group last week, is as nonprofits, we have to just kind of embrace the opportunity of Foursquare, because you can use Foursquare in your nonprofit events and in your cause marketing programs without changing anything about Foursquare. It's not like you have to get Foursquare on the phone and, you know, and start changing things around or ask them to create something for you or what have you. You can use it as it is right now to, you know, to promote your cause and to enhance your cause marketing program. So, you know, what we kind of have mandated for all our cause marketing programs moving forward is that we will use Foursquare for those programs in some way. Like, for example, we are doing a joint program with iPotty, which is a retailer here in Boston, Fuddruckers, which is a restaurant chain, and the Boston Bruins, which is our professional hockey team here in Boston. And we're going to be doing a point-of-sale program with them coming up this spring, and we're going to integrate Foursquare into it somehow. And it may be with the check-in process, it may be with the mayors, but whatever that is, we're going to have, you know, some type of component in that. Because I think that, you know, this type of technology and service is going to be really important to cause marketing moving ahead.
So, I don't use Foursquare. How does that work then? How do you get your data, your charity, your promotions into the system?
Well, it depends on how, like I said, it kind of depends on how you plan on using Foursquare. You know, like if the good news is that if you plan on using it on a check-in basis or a mayor basis, you can use the service as is. Like, for example, one of the ways that we could use Foursquare down the road is with our event Halloween Town, which I've talked to you a little bit about, and that's a big event that we do. It's 14,000 people in the month of October, and a big sponsor of that is a big retailer, iPotty, which is a potty supply chain here in New England with about 50 stores. And one of the things that we're looking at to reward iPotty customers, loyal iPotty customers, is for iPotty customers who are mayors of different iPotty locations, the morning of Halloween Town's opening, which means that they have frequented the store more than anyone else, right? That's how you become mayor of a certain location. They get free tickets to Halloween Town. And all they have to do, Olivia, is show up at Halloween Town and flash the screen on their iPhone, on their Droid, or on their BlackBerry, and it shows that they're mayor of that particular location, and they get free tickets to Halloween Town. So it's an easy way of conducting a promotion that you can tie in with your point-of-sale program by promoting it on the pinup, and it's also a great way that a business can say, hey, this nonprofit is really helping me trying to reward and identifying my top customers. And, you know, so it's a way of kind of rewarding people for that. And that's what people really like about Foursquare, too, is it's a way for stores to see who their biggest and best customers are. Because when you're a mayor of a certain location, that means that you've been to that location more than anyone else. And so it's a way of rewarding them for something like that. So that's like a simple way of doing it.
What about for the user base for Foursquare? What level, how does it have to grow to really buy businesses and buy nonprofits? Or do you think that some campaigns that incorporate it will draw more people into to be users of it?
You know, I think that I think it's going to work both ways. I think that, you know, right now, you know, there's actually a great graph out there right now that shows the growth of Foursquare as like a hockey stick. and you know, and right now we're seeing kind of the shooting side of the stick, and it's going way up, and I think here in the United States it's at like 400,000 people. You know, it's really focused on urban centers. You know what I mean? Obviously, the biggest one being New York City, but there are other places that it's doing very, very well, and you know, but there is just there's just a lot of growth in that area, and I think that when you combine location-based services like CauseWorld and Foursquare with the growing trend to more people using their mobile devices, right? That's where everyone's kind of going with how they're going to use things in the future. That's really where nonprofits need to kind of position themselves. And if you're a nonprofit who does cause marketing, then even more so to kind of be centered there. But there's definitely a lot of growth there, and we can contribute that growth through these cause marketing programs. Now, if you're out in the middle of if where are you in Brazil? If you're in Brazil, maybe you shouldn't use it. You know, no. But if you know, if you're not in an, you know, I think if you're outside a city, I think it's, you know, I think it's tough to use Foursquare. And even in smaller markets, I think it's challenging too. But in bigger cities and stuff like that, I think there's a lot of benefits to it.
So, you know, it's interesting. The nonprofits get a rap of being late adapters and slow to be on new technologies, a bit Luddite. And you are really embracing these. You're a user in the world and then integrating them to the campaigns you do and then sharing them with other nonprofits and encouraging other businesses and nonprofits to incorporate these types of location-based programs. Is that a personal thing for you? Did you just luck out that you like this type of thing, or do you see more nonprofits going the way of technology? I think, what are your thoughts on it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I wish I could say, I think more nonprofits are going to have to go in the direction of technology. I don't know if they're embracing it, though. Every time I go into a group of nonprofits and I talk to them about social media and technology and stuff like that, I get more questions and more whining about why they should be doing certain things and why would I want to do that. And, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, a question even I got last week, Olivia, about like, you know, after talking about Foursquare with people, you know, someone said, well, you know, why? And it's like, and it was kind of like, well, you were asking the same question of yourself 5 years ago about Facebook. You know, why should you be on Facebook? And I think this is even a more compelling reason to be on Foursquare now. And I think as nonprofits, we need to stop questioning some of these things and just start trying and using them and seeing some of the potential in them, and so that we can get ahead of the game on some of these things, because things are so decentralized now with technology that we can be just as good at some of these things as for-profit friends, but we need to bring the right attitude to them, and that's
right.
What a lot of that's what a lot of nonprofits are not bringing.
There's an attitude of resistance or skepticism instead of embracing it as a creative resource and as a tool. I know you from online and from your blog, and so, you know, of course you live in that world, but it still made an impression on me that you're bringing these new technologies that I'm not even using to bear on your work and to bear on the companies that you're working with. Mm-hmm. Joe, can you just talk about Facebook Causes? Do you use that? What are your thoughts on Facebook Causes and the effectiveness of it as a program?
You know, Olivia, I actually don't use Facebook Causes, so it's kind of a short conversation. But it seems like it's, you know, what I use Facebook right now for is mainly as a, you know, we have a Facebook fan page here at Boston Medical Center, and we use it, you know, mainly as a bulletin board. And, you know, I haven't seen a lot of other people besides some of the biggest charities raising money from Facebook Causes. You know, I think that Facebook will probably be a great source of of funding and monies raised in the future, but at this point, I really haven't seen it. And but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be active on it, kind of like Foursquare. And so while we're certainly active on it, I haven't been using Facebook causes.
Okay. And I've used it.
Yeah, what do you think of it? Do you think it's any good? Or?
Yeah, there's not a lot of engagement on it. And I think that it's, I don't think that Facebook made it clear how it is and how it functions really and how people should interact with it. So I think that that's the problem. And there's two things. There's some vagueness about it, and then there's a lack of engagement.
Yeah.
It keeps, feels like it's going to start, Facebook causes come in great, and, well, we just haven't seen it yet.
So yeah, no.
That's my feeling, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So is there anything else that you want to share about social media or metrics? And maybe if you have time, you want to talk about a thing that you've worked with that's been really successful and some of the aspects of it that made it successful.
Well, I think it's interesting. Like I said, having coming out of this conference I was at last week, where I had the opportunity to kind of speak to a lot of nonprofits and to kind of see kind of their response to different things, and to see some of the hesitation about cause marketing, and then to see some of the outright reservation about social media, and to reiterate the need to try new things, and for nonprofits to kind of be out there and looking at cause marketing and to be bottom line focused, but to see the potential that cause marketing really offers to create new relationships with people, new sources of funding, and kind of opening your brain a little bit, which it's done for me, about other opportunities like social media, because I don't think if I had ever gotten into social media that if I had never gotten into cause marketing that I would be into social media now. Because it's been such an important area for me. And I can't underestimate that, the value of something like that in terms of helping me grow as a fundraising professional. So it's important not to get stuck.
Right. That's something you mentioned there about some nonprofits, a reservation or skepticism about how, which, truthfully, I haven't heard that before. I'd love to hear some more about that. What are their fears? Do they think that they're just being a pawn in a cause washing program?
I think some of it, I think some of it, Olivia, is, I think nonprofits are just, they're stressed these days. They have fewer staff than probably, they have less staff than ever before because of the economy and stuff like that. And they're really trying to figure out where they should kind of put their attention. And, they also do not feel, nonprofits feel fundamentally uncomfortable with marketing. And, I think they feel comfortable providing their services and offering their services and talking about their mission, but they don't feel comfortable marketing themselves as an organization. And I think that's what makes it so difficult for them to kind of cross over and do the cause marketing, because it requires that they think a different way about themselves, that they think of themselves as a strategy, that they think of themselves as an asset, as something that can be leveraged, and someone that can be leveraged on their behalf. And they really don't see it that way. And then with the social media, unless they can see, a real return on what they're doing, they don't want to do it. They look at it and they say, well, if I can't get this much out of it, then I'm really not going to do it. Not realizing that, there's a great opportunity to build relationships there and to kind of use it as a prospecting tool, as an opportunity for thought leadership, and all the great things that you and I use it for, who you and I would have never met if it wasn't for social media, and all the great opportunities that exist there that, they can only see as far as the hand in front of them. And they need to get beyond that if they're going to be more successful in their work.
So what could do a business that is interested in setting up a cause marketing partnership, and I know we talked about this in an earlier conversation we had, Well, what can they do to help alleviate some of these either stresses or fears, or just kind of the blindness a nonprofit seeing itself as an asset?
Right. Well, you know what it is, the big thing I think that makes people feel better when we talk to them about cause marketing is that, you know, it's kind of like they see themselves sometimes as like, you know, they're in this fortress, you know, they're behind this wall, and they have this moat around them, and they're trying to protect themselves from the outside world. And, you know, what we're trying to show them is that, you know, upstairs in the second balcony of the kingdom is, you know, is this big pot of gold. And what that means is that they already have some assets as an organization that they could put to work for a cause marketing program. And a lot of people just don't realize that. You know, we work with an annual bike ride. We're working with an annual bike ride here in New England. And it's one, what is it? It's in the top 30 bike rides, bikes, runs, walks in the country in terms of dollars raised. I think it raised like $7 million last year. And it has no sponsors. There are no sponsors associated with this event. And what we have tried to educate these people, and I think what we've been successful at, is showing them that there is a great opportunity for sponsorship, and you already have the things in place to be successful, that you don't even need to, you don't need to try something new. You don't need to do something that's really uncomfortable, because so many of the things that you need to be successful are right there within the event itself, because you already have a huge crowd for the event. You already have, you're already raising big dollars with the event. And those are the types of things that sponsors want. They want a nice big crowd. They want lots of promotion. They want to know that you're raising lots of money for the community. And you have those things already. So those are kind of the big things that we try to make people feel comfortable about, is people feel a lot more comfortable when they know that something already exists in their backyard and they don't have to go out and forage for it.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it makes sense what you said about the resources, and I know we talked before about, for both nonprofits and for-profits, how CrossMark only, you know, one relatively small part of a revenue stream.
Right.
So I can see how to allocate the resources for that requires some strategic thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, is there anything else that you'd like to add today before I let you get back to the work you're doing?
Nope, I think I'm all set. I think this has been a great interview series. I appreciate it.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.